So our scripture for this week, if you all were, for those of you who look at the bulletin and read it and say, oh, that's what I'm supposed to read this week, was Psalm 37. Psalm 37 is really long. I'm not going to read it all. I'm going to read the first 9 verses. And those verses are going to help sort of set the stage for our, I guess you could call it the message part of this morning, which is actually going to take us forward to the New Testament, to the Sermon on the Mount, and Jesus feeding the 5,000. And I'm not going to say any more than that. I want you to listen to the words in this psalm and then think about that, if you can hold that, as we go into Jesus feeding the 5,000. Psalm 37, the exhortation to patience and trust. Do not fret because of the wicked. Do not be envious of wrongdoers, for they will soon fade like the grass and wither like the green herb. Trust in the Lord and do good, so you will live in the land and enjoy security. Take delight in the Lord, and the Lord will give you the desires of your heart. Commit your way to the Lord, trust in him, and he will act. The Lord will make your vindication shine like the light, and the justice of your cause like the noonday. Be still before the Lord. Wait patiently for her. Do not fret over those who prosper in their way, over those who carry out evil devices. Refrain from anger and forsake wrath. Do not fret. It leads only to evil. For the wicked shall be cut off, but those who wait for the Lord shall inherit the earth.
Trust in the Lord and do what is right, and you will dwell securely in the land. Take delight in the Lord, and God will give you the desires of your heart.
Who inherits the earth? Those who trust in the Lord. Dr. Ellen Davis at Duke has been very generous and kind with me. She's a Hebrew scholar and written some wonderful books and is amazing. She says that Psalm 37 is the premier agrarian psalm. Think about poor people who are in danger of losing their land. And this psalm says those are the ones that are going to get the earth. It flies in the face of reason. It flies in the face of what we see. And of course, that concept right there is one of the Beatitudes, is it not? The meek, in that case. Clarence Jordan does a great exposition on the meek. It's not a frequently used word in the Old Testament, apparently. For example, Moses was meek. It doesn't mean subservient and without a backbone. Quite the contrary. Reminds me of the nonviolent, what Mahatma Gandhi said of training for nonviolent resistance. He said, if you show me a pacifist and a hothead. Give me the hothead. Give me the person with a short temper that's ready to go round. not the pacifist. Give me the one with the hot temper, because it takes guts to stand unarmed before people who are armed. And so the meek, that's the meek. They don't take up arms. They're stronger than that. Braver than that, I should say. More blessed than that. Jesus said they would inherit the earth. Brenda and Rachel were both attracted to the song Jesus, what I call Jesus Feeds 5,000. Ched Myers, anybody read Ched Myers' book on Mark Binding the Strong Man? This is not a miracle, folks. This isn't one guy taking a kid's lunch. Thank goodness mama had made sure that young boy had lunch. But everybody had something in their pocket or whatever. And it was the giving of all from this one lad and the blessing of Jesus that turns out there was enough for all. So when I was imagining that story and thinking about it as a songwriter, I thought to myself, and you know, in John's gospel, and maybe in Mark's too, I don't remember, but in John's, Jesus blesses the meal before all are fed. And so as a songwriter, I'm like, reckon what would Jesus pray? And immediately, another beatitude came to mind. And that's the refrain to this song. And so I'd like to invite you to sing along with me on this. I hope I've got a people-friendly key here. It sounds like this. I'll start with the refrain, and if you pick it up, join in, but surely, hopefully, those who wish to sing, and you all are very enthusiastic and fun singers, I like this, we'll have it by the end. It goes like this. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for what's right. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst, for they shall be satisfied. Well, the day was wearing down. They were alone. Had a mop. And I just messed up the words. I'm sorry. I gotta start it over. Well, the day was wearing down. They were a long way from town. One young boy had 5 loaves of bread and 2 fish for to pass around. But a year's pay would barely suffice to feed a crowd that size. Jesus looked around, had them all sit down, and to heaven he lifted his eyes. He said, blessed are those who hunger satisfied. Through God's amazing grace, they all got more than a taste. Those so blessed may now see to the rest. Take your baskets, let none go to waste. And blessed are those who hunger and thirst, hunger and thirst for what's right. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst, for they shall be satisfied. Let's do it again. Blessed are those. Contradictions, climate change, it's calling the bluff, it's calling our bluff. I look around, many of you are my age or a little older, a little younger, we're all, and thank goodness for the young people, thank goodness for 350.org that organized 17 million people to march in 80 countries on September 20th. Bill McKibben, the head of that organization, said he'd like to buy everyone a beer that marched that day, except most of them are underage. And it struck me, marching that day with young people, that our imaginations need to expand. I do educational work in schools. I teach about the history of bluegrass music. I played in a touring bluegrass group for 30 years. Got to play all over the U.S., Canada, 15 European tours, albums, Flying Fish Records. Anybody know Flying Fish Records? All right. Very proud to be on Norman Blake's and Newgrass Revival's label. That went out of business The owner died in 1995. But The band toured all over the place, and I, like most of us, are ignorant what we're doing. In the educational programs in schools, sometimes we deal with North Carolina history. That's a part of bluegrass music. In fact, I really use bluegrass as a connection for social studies for these kids. And working with fifth graders recently, we were dealing with the Montgomery bus boycott of 1955, and we were, of course, looking back to Frederick Douglass and slavery. And what I found myself reminding them is that the abolition of slavery was very contentious. In this country, it resulted in bloodshed, obviously. It resulted in the death of more Americans than have died in all the wars since. Of course, everyone that fell was an American. But nonetheless, about 80,000? Almost 1,000,000, 800,000. It was a fifth of the population or something. So what a bloodbath. In England, as I'm sure you know, they managed to get rid of slavery without any bloodshed. It took some finessing of the legislature and this and that, and of course inspired by the music of John Newton, who a reformed slave trader whose heart was broken by Jesus. And then, what's his name, Wilberforce. And the chief argument was economic. We can't live without. How will we eat? Our whole economy depends on slave labor. And it took people like you guys with imaginations to say, nah, I think we'll be all right, need to stop enslaving people. And so now we need to imagine a non-fossil fuel economy. I can't imagine it. I can't imagine an economy that might contract. We have an economy built on growth. I can't imagine. Of course you can't imagine it. I can't either. We need to pray. The Psalms hold up contradictions throughout. I think now, looking back 20 years ago, I had the idea of setting the Psalms to roughly more or less bluegrass music, the kind of music that I learned to love in Asheville, North Carolina, growing up there, and the kind of music that I play, mixed with Americana and folk and Celtic and just roots music. But bluegrass in particular, the Hebrews, as I mentioned, were agrarian people. They played stringed instruments. You can see those notes throughout the Psalter. It was an oral tradition. They didn't read them out of books. You learned it on mama's lap. Jesus heard the Psalms in utero and was rocked to sleep with them and heard the elders singing them in the fields, etc., etc. And they were only written down after the Hebrews were scattered and the diaspora about 500 years before Christ. And so then wise people start saying, yo, we better write these things down. People are getting spread out all over the place. They're forgetting them, you know. And so we will. So that's when the Psalter was compiled, but it's an oral tradition. So agrarian people, stringed instruments, oral tradition. The thought occurred to me, it seemed irreverent. I'd only converted to Christianity shortly before that. I felt like I should just be quiet and observe what's going on, but it became sort of a burning thing to set the Psalms to an oral tradition, stringed music that I was familiar with, to set the Psalms to bluegrass as the ancient Hebrews intended. It seemed like a terribly irreverent thought. Aren't we supposed to say thee and thou and stuff? You know, and but people encouraged me in that, and we have one, the first CD, Steady Love. We sang the first, that's the first psalm I set. Because why? It was easy. That was low-hanging fruit. Call and response, can do, you know. And I did one CD called Steady Love, and I assembled about 9 musicians. And those of you that do end up with CDs, you'll hear I'm only singing 3 or 4 on each one. We have 3 outstanding women singers and 2 other male singers. So, and there's drums and there's all kinds of instruments on the CDs as far as that goes. But I made one CD and somebody said, all right, and I think there are 9 on that one. Somebody said, all right, 141 to go. And I was like, no, this was just a one-off. But then nobody went anywhere. And we got a gig at Merlefest. And I said, I guess there's more to come. And so then the second CD and the third and now the fourth. And so it's a collective now. There are about 12 musicians. And anywhere it's just me or maybe 2 or 3 of us. And Brenda knows Brian Bolton, the Mennonite pastor up in where else? Harrisonburg, Virginia, who's one of the singers in our group. And so I've digressed mightily from what I was set out to say. But there's your history, Rachel, or whatever. thank you. Contradiction. I think one of the things that attracted me to the Psalms was contradiction. And one of the things that disappoints me in the hymnal, a little bit, not much. I love hymns. I love the hymnals. But only one line of a psalm then gives way to a 4-verse hymn. And I was like, these are songs. They made sense as a whole to folks. They weren't hearing them and going, wonder, reckon what they mean by that. They got it. And the contradictions throughout the psalms are, I think, what attracted me to them. It brings up questions. This is where the energy is. This is where the grace is. The Psalms are the most quoted Old Testament book in the New Testament. Jesus quotes them all the time. Contradictions, Psalm 22. My God, oh God, my God, why have you forsaken me? It starts. And it ends with everything's going to be all right, that psalm, that long psalm. And what happened, you know, between that opening line and the end? This is throughout the Psalter. And when we pull out a pretty line, that's great, and we can write a beautiful hymn. But I was interested in the Psalter and the meat of it. Eugene Peterson, Presbyterian pastor, wrote the Message, died last year, I think, sadly. He has a great book on Psalms I'd like to recommend. It's called Answering God. And it's a thin little book, and it's wonderful. And in it, he tells us, how do you use the Psalter? And he answers his own question by saying, you read them sequentially every day for the rest of your life. And I can say I've become a sucker. And it's been 20 years of, I think I missed one day one time. I can't live without them. They are, as James Mays, a scholar, says, a means of grace. The entire scripture, of course, is a means of grace, but the Psalms in particular are a means of grace. And for me, it's wrestling with those contradictions. I'm about to sing Psalm 126, and it starts off with memory. And I think memory is one of the ways that we learn to expand our imagination, and the Psalms lead us. Others besides Eugene Peterson cite the Psalms as instructions in prayer. And that can seem counterintuitive, can't it? I was going to do this. I'm not going to, but I was going to just open the Bible to the Psalms and see what we see. Imagine we're doing it for the first time. I said, Jesus prayed these. Jesus sung these. We all have. Let's open it up. Destroy my enemies. Dash their babies. This is the poster child of why some people won't read the Psalms. Dash their babies against the wall. That's the way Psalm 137 ends. We sang 136. Yeah, God's steady love. 137, dash their babies against the wall. That's horrible, isn't it? It is. You've never thought anything like that, have you? You would be useless to Gandhi if you haven't thought that. I'm sorry, I don't mean dashing babies. I mean strong, visceral anger. Where is it directed? Brenda already said. It's directed to God. You think God doesn't know that you just flipped off that person at the red light? It's between us and God. It's answering God. We have anger for a reason, I suppose. We have grief for a reason. And the Psalms do not shy away from this. We do. Lots of texts, hymns do. The Psalter does not. And so to refer to Psalm 85, which we sung earlier, it evokes, and I didn't see this parallel. They are actually next to each other on the CD, Psalm 85 and Psalm 26. I did not notice the parallels. Psalm 85 starts off, O Lord, you once smiled on your land, and you forgave the crimes. No, not many Bibles translate it that way. That's why I go to Ellen Davis to get it. She just sits there with the Masoretic text, and she spouts what it says, and we go back and forth a little bit. You forgave the crimes of Israel. This is corporate prayer, and this is corporate crime. Climate change, greed, too much oil. We cannot stop it. This is a corporate problem. It takes a huge imagination to get around this. The Psalms can help. Psalm 85 goes on. You forgave the crimes of your people. And then what does it do? It says, oh Lord, are you going to be angry forever? Will you not turn and forgive us again. And so the basis for the appeal to beg forgiveness yet again is the fact that Israel had experienced redemption before. Psalm 126, same thing. Starts off with a joyful recounting. Excuse me, I need water. Okay, start off with a joyful recounting of a time when the whole world noticed that God had saved Israel, and their mouths were full of laughter, and they were singing songs of joy. And all of that is a setup, because it's not a time of joy when this psalm was written. We don't know the exact circumstances, and that's another beautiful thing about the Psalter. It's now. Scholars are like, I believe that was after the Babylonian conquest. Well, thank you, maybe it was. Now, what other irrelevant things can we come up with for this instruction in prayer, this sacred text? Our mouths were filled with laughter, but now restore us again. And the psalm also cites a lesson from creation. It says, restore us again, like you do in the Negev. And that is a desolate region, apparently. But around this time of year, the winter rains start. And what was a dry, desiccated gulch, rock and dirt, bursts with flowers and greenery. There are all these green ribbons, apparently, in the desert. And so the psalmist says, like you do there, every year, restore us like that. And then it goes to harvest, in the prayer for harvest. They're sowing in tears. And I was telling Brent this anecdote to Brenda. They're sowing in tears. We don't know where our food comes from. We have no idea. Some of you do, I'm sure. But overall, right, as a culture, we have no idea. And so sowing in tears, that's mysterious. But Dr. Davis was doing work in the Sudan and was teaching his seminary there. And she's kind of honest and says, you know, I'm not sure why they're sowing in tears. And her students are like, wow, really? This is our teacher. Because they're agrarians. They know where their food comes from. And the sowing, the scattering of the seed that Jesus also, of course, talks about famously, that's your children's breakfast, y'all. You got a choice. We're going to eat this, or we're going to go throw it on the ground and pray. Summer is the dry time. We think of summer, oh, that's great, there's abundance. Summer is dry. And it's not till those winter rains come that things get good. And so that's why we're sowing in tears in this psalm. So, but just please notice the contradictions. I encourage everybody to just, that's where you will find grace. That's where you will find, and you don't have to answer it. You may not know why. Psalm 13, for example, how long, O Lord, will you forget me forever? How long will you hide your face from me? And it goes on. But for some reason at the end, it's like, but I trust in your steadfast love. And my heart delights in your salvation. And what happened? The five verses of utterly depressed, verse 6, it's called a turn. The scholars call it the psalm. Oh, that psalm just turned. What happened is a model of prayer. It's grace. It invites us in. Let's find out what happens. Psalm 126. Brought back our lives, we were like those who dream. Then our mouths were filled with laughter and songs of joy.
Lord has done great things for them. Indeed, the Lord has done great things for us, and we are glad. Do this in memory of me. Like the springs in the wilderness, those who sow in tears, let them reap with songs of joy. Those who go out weeping in pain, bearing the seed for sowing their grain, they shall come home singing for joy. Harvest in hand. It's happened before, it can happen again.
Thank you.